Well, hello there. Welcome back to Reality TV Podcast, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, your host and guide through this episode, episode 90. And today we're deep diving on the premiere of 90 Day Fiancé. How perfect is that? Episode 90, 90 Day Fiancé. Thank you, baby Jesus. It's just feeding my OCD soul. Now, for those of you who missed the announcement, I am so freaking excited to be starting another new podcast called Moms on the Rocks. My co-host is Carrie from Sip and Shine, and she was just a recent guest on For Crying Out Loud. That is like big league, big time. What we're going to be doing on Moms on the Rocks is talking about all the things real women and moms talk about and go through. Not really a mommy podcast, more like we are women who are not just moms. We work, we stay home. We'll be talking about our relationships, marriage, dating and divorce, kids, going back to school for our master's degrees. And you know what? Of course, we got to talk about TVs, movies, all those hot topics like the royal wedding. Damn it, I have so much to say about Harry and Meghan's big day. But for right now, because I have so much to cover with 90 Day Fiancé today, I'll just say I think Meghan looked gorgeous, no doubt about it, but I think she really needed me there to tweak something. So check us out, Moms on the Rocks, subscribe on your favorite podcast app or wherever you're listening right now. It's up, it's live, and our first episode will be dropping within a week. And of course, real quick before I dive into the dumpster fire, check out Patreon this week and listen to all previous bonus episodes. That's patreon.com/realitytvpod. You get lots of extra perks like the secret Facebook group, bonus content, and early episodes. And chat with me and each other at Reality TV Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Okay, let's get into this 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After. Now, there were quite a few flashbacks and recapping of the previous season, so I'm not going to go too in-depth on those because there's just so much to talk about, like in the opening credits, where Luis is dressed up like the, I always say this wrong, I think it's Abominable Snowman from the Rudolph Claymation movie. What the hell was that? Someone call PETA. Not that I'm pro or against PETA, but I just want to see something thrown at Luis. Now, also, we have Annie talking about David's gigantic ass while he's crowing on about their incredible sex life. I still stand by my diagnosis of him having a reabsorbed penis, so I think this is more of something that happens in his imagination. Now, we also get to see Jorge's boob job. Don't believe me? Yeah, go back and look at my Twitter and Instagram where I posted a screenshot. George's/Jorge's left boob is the size of Anfisa's head, and I'm not exaggerating in the slightest. And speaking of boobs, Chantel, what the hell is she doing? She's got to stop inflating those things. Stop it. There's no wonder Pedro is irritable because between Chantel and her damn boobs, they're probably taking up, what, 65, 75% of that studio apartment space that they're in? And not to mention River, who was in the previews. Oh, that little cowardly sideshow Bob of a man. I cannot wait to hate him all over again. But let's get to the couples because we got a lot of couples and a lot of things to catch up on. First up, Jorge and Anfisa. Now we go back and forth between George and Jorge, so I'm just going to use it interchangeably. It's just however my soul feels it in the moment. So Jorge has been lounging around that same hotel suite and he's trying to eat his double quarter pounder with cheese. I know a double quarter pounder with cheese when I see it, but he's taking these little dainty, clean bites. He's not fooling anyone. There's no way he doesn't take those things down in four bites on the reg when we're not around. And have we determined yet if Jorge contracted the little person gene during season hiatus? Because in his confessionals, I'm whispering because he might hear me, he's wearing a Target employee red shirt and he looks much more like condensed or squat than usual, but his body is like a shapeshifter of sorts. Sometimes he's a large man, sometimes he's a, well, he's not petite, but shorter. Now, Anfisa, she still loves that arched back posture, which after looking at the photographs again, like I really got to take it in this time, I think it's just a result of the fabric and swimsuit she's wearing being pulled up so far up her ass crack that it's just like a natural reflex to bow your back like that. And who would have thought that things haven't been going well with Jorge and Anfisa? Jorge lied about being a thousandaire. Anfisa's expectations are extraordinarily high, combined with a violent temper. And Jorge just says whatever he needs to say in the moment to get back right with Anfisa, even if it's a lie. It is a recipe for disaster. So in addition to sleeping in a hotel, George is back with his parents and drinking alone in bars that kind of look like the set out of a romantic comedy. Meanwhile, Anfisa is bringing her hot sauce to her boxing instructor, who is bringing the best smarmy personal trainer game for TV. That guy creeped me out. The whole scenario catching up with these two, though, is really bizarre from here on out in the episode, because Anfisa has her green card already, okay? So she's got a driver's license. She's living in her own place. Now, Jorge isn't giving her money, so she's just getting paid, keeping up to date, I think, I hope, with bills by promoting stuff on social media. Now, in my opinion, I'm like, okay, hey, good for her and good for Jorge, because I don't think he should have to be paying for her if they are not together, and good for her if she's making money how she can make it. Now, it does seem as though they are both heartbroken for each other. How? I mean, well, none of us know, but they're both taking care of things to separate, divorce, and move on their own thing. Jorge is seeing a team of attorneys who I actually kind of think that they look like ladies I would want to hang out with, because damn, I mean, divorce attorneys, the stories they could tell, I love that stuff. I don't like living through it with my friends and family if they're going through a divorce, but God, I would just want to, I'll treat them to dinner, drinks, just spill and tell me all the best stories that you have. And I loved how they told Jorge that he looks more relaxed. Yeah, well, of course he looks more relaxed because he only has two t-shirts. He has to be more relaxed. All of his button-down shirts have probably been held at the dry cleaners for collateral until he can pay his bill. Now, speaking of Jorge being casual, he's getting his casual on, again, in another t-shirt, in a bar with his friend Ramon. I think we've seen him in a previous season. Maybe they were co-workers. I don't know, but he does look familiar. Now, Ramon himself is fresh off watching the tell-all, and he has some thoughts and some intel. Again, this is where this whole thing going on with Anfisa and George is bizarre. Ramon says that he got a text with photos and video of Anfisa online doing what he calls webcamming activities, and he thinks that she's possibly escorting. Now, Jorge says, no, it's all made up. He just made up all those lies during the tell-all. There's no truth to it. He just said those things because he wanted to hurt Anfisa. Okay, let's say we believe Jorge. But what about those pictures online? Now, I gotta say, I think if Anfisa wants to do webcam stuff, then go ahead, do it. I don't think it's against the law. It's not my thing. I wouldn't do it. But if you're a consenting adult and you're not breaking any laws, go ahead, do whatever you want. It's just something sounds, I don't want to say fishy, just something sounds off. Jorge's saying it's made up, but it's just his vibe of saying it. Like, I get the vibe that Anfisa told him, you better take it all back on camera. Jorge promised he would, but now the situation's just weird and it doesn't make sense, which is why the explanation doesn't make sense. I don't think I'm making sense at this point, but something is suspicious about explaining away this supposed lie that he said. All right, now let's move on to Pedro and Chantel. Wow, they are going to have an incredible season, not for them, but for us. Now we catch up with this slow-moving giraffe, also known as Chantel, and my little Poquito Pedro on the side of the road. Romance. Kind of reminds me of Andrea and Lamar reuniting on the side of the freeway outside federal prison and our love after lockup on Lifetime. Danielle Steele, eat your heart out. I actually forgot about how much I hated Chantel until I heard her slow speak, and I remembered how much I love Pedro when he said, "I am from the Dominican Republic." My Pedrocito. But my love for him does not forgive what goes down at that shipping store with the TV. Both of these people are freaking idiots. God help me if they procreate. Chantel and Pedro walk into this UPS store, knockoff UPS store, with a box that is easily, what, 5 by 4 feet, and they want to ship it to the Dominican Republic. Now, at no point did they even wonder or ask the woman behind the desk, hey, what is it going to cost to ship this gigantic, heavy TV that barely fit in the car? How much is it going to cost them to ship it all the way to an island in the middle of, is it an ocean, a gulf, wherever the hell it is? Gee, I wonder if it might be better to just, send some money instead and then they can buy a TV there and have it that fucking day. But no. Instead, the two of them just, while the guy in the back of the place spends 30 minutes probably wrapping this thing up with cardboard and foam and tape so it could probably survive a nuclear explosion at this point. And then the desk clerk rings it all up and it's going to cost, now if you didn't see it, get ready for this, $1,053 to ship it. Yeah. Neither of them can comprehend why it would be so much. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's either going on a plane or a ship, so you know it's going to be a couple hundred dollars there. They end up leaving because they're not going to pay $1,000. They end up having to pay $58 for the box alone. Now, I do put some blame on the clerk because, I mean, she should have told them, like, hey, this is going to be at least $1,000 to ship it. Are you sure you want to do that? But she didn't. I also want to put some blame elsewhere, and that would be on Pedro's mom and sister, because do they really need that big of a TV? That was a massive size TV. Come on, those two women are working Pedro, and I'm sure they're doing it because they know it pisses Chantel off. But I think they're too vapid to realize that if they keep doing this, it will cause a rift between Pedro and Chantel, and then their gravy train that's buying them a TV is going to be coming right back to the Dominican Republic, and that TV is going to be at the pawn shop, just like David and Annie. Now, another idea might be maybe instead of spending money on the laser lights on Pedro's keyboard and desk, Pedro could fashion himself a strobe light to lull Chantel into a deep sleep, and then he can just run his little butt down to the Western Union at the end of the block and send a grand down for the month. She won't even know. Or he could even, you know, talk to me. Because although I think Family Pedro is taking advantage of Pedro, I could talk him through some things. Like, for example, that Chantel herself is being a hypocrite. He should be allowed to say that. She doesn't want anyone talking about her or her family, but she has a whole car full of family talking shit about him too when they were back in the Dominican Republic. And it's not like they don't do it at home. That's what the whole season's going to be about. And they were disrespectful to more than just Pedro. They were disrespectful to his entire extended family. That is way worse than anything we've seen from mother and sister Pedro. Now let's scoot on south to Florida to our girl, the star of the show, Nicole. Immediately, I am drawn into the amount of trash and filth that she has her daughter May living in. The beds weren't made. There's crap and empty fast food cups all over the place. And of course, that pissed me off, right? But what pissed me off more was when Nicole said, "It's hard meeting people when you're a single mom, so that's why I went online. And that's where I met Azen." Hey, Nicole. Maybe take your kid to, the park or outside to play, or maybe to events or activities where other people are with their kids. I am sure you would meet other people there. And even better than that, May will burn off some of that energy that you say she has plenty of because, she might have something else to do besides twirl garbage around her head while she's jumping on your frickin' bed. I'm just getting started. Now, I do have to say on a positive note, I always breathe a very deep sigh of relief when I see Nicole is out and about on her own because at least I know Grandma Bobby is taking care of May and she's not stuck in that hoard. But Nicole is out at a bar with her best friend, Jessica. Now, let's just put best friend Jessica in quotes, because I think it's really sweet of this woman who was assigned to Nicole to pretend she's her friend. I really think she's kind of like an aide or a companion of sorts. Perhaps like Britney Spears' dad is her conservator. I think Nicole is the only one thinking she is just her friend who accompanies her on public outings when her mom and dad aren't available. And you know what? She's really good at her job because although she toes the line of being her friend, she also calls Nicole on this notion of as in actually coming here and getting married. Now, as far as Nicole is concerned, as in is coming to America Eddie Murphy style because he has an interview for his travel visa. Now, this is where all the rumors over the past several months are catching up to what we're seeing on screen, and ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I am loving it. So let's fast forward to the morning of this interview. Nicole gets up at 6:30 a.m. because Azin's interview is at 8 a.m. Now, she's acting like 6:30 a.m. is like the ass crack of dawn. However, most of us are up by then. We've been up for probably an hour. Except Nicole, you frickin' dumb. It's not like you're getting up for a graveyard shift to work. We sure as shit know that. But I'm gonna stop here and I'm just gonna tell it like it is because I have near 20/20 vision. I actually have excellent farsighted vision. So I know what I saw. And what I saw was Nicole high as hell in this scene. Now, if you don't remember, she was sitting on the couch talking with her mom. Now, I don't know if it's pot or pills, but it's not just tiredness. Her eyes were jacked up. She's slurring her words. Everything is slowed down. Now, if you just heard that beeping, you know what that was? That was my bacon being done baked in the oven for dinner. We're having BLTs, and boy, did I not even mean to time that right. If I was going to be bacon, and it was going to be ready, it was going to be during a Nicole segment. Now, I'm going to put my bacon on hold here because I don't even care if it gets burnt. This is my priority. If Nicole's mom wasn't already scared shitless that May is alone with Nicole, this image of her being high off her ass should have put Bobby over the edge, but strangely, she didn't seem to notice. And I don't want to blame her family with how Nicole turned out because I think some of that is just genetics, but perhaps this is just a piece of the puzzle of how she got the way that she is. But now the loopiness continues as she's driving in the car with May. And you know the scene that I'm talking about where she's brainwashing May into calling Azin daddy. Like, oh, is she missing daddy? She's so fucking stupid. And for hours even after that, she keeps waiting and waiting for Azin to call her and tell her how his interview went. You know what you could have been doing during that time, Nicole? Picking up the hoard on your floor, or at least throw away the dirty tissue in that Chick-fil-A cup that was next to the bed that has been there since at least the night before. And then my gag reflex was correct because it was triggered and it never steers me wrong. You see May slurping down the remnants in that cup. Again, it was there from at least the day before. Let's just hope that that little baby, well, she's not a baby anymore, even though she's in diapers. Let's just hope she's up to date on all of her tetanus shots and vaccinations. Well, now it's 6 hours later, and Mother Bobby shows up. She says Nicole is, quote, fit to be tied, because Azin still hasn't called. Well, not for nothing, that's the first time ever Nicole has been called fit, so there's that. But yeah, no word from Azin. But this scene did give us a nice close-up of the chocolate fingerprints on the wall near the dirty light switch by the door. I think I've got a bingo. Well, finally, Azin calls. Nicole whines out a, "What happened? You didn't call me." And then the call drops, and so do our hearts. We won't find out until next week what Azin says. Now, Molly and Luis, you're up. This is not a lie. The first 2 seconds of Molly's very first scene is her screaming, "Kinsley!" And I got really scared, first because I got a flashback of Kim Richards calling for her killer Cujo Kingsley. I think we can all relate. But then it wasn't much better because then I remembered Kinsley. We'll leave it at that. Now, I also remembered the evil owls Molly has around her house because guess what? Those camera operators, editors, they put one right smack dab in the foreground in front of Molly where she's washing her dishes. And then again, there's a set of 2 owls in the background during her confessionals. Look behind her to the left, right in front of the fireplace. Bravo, nicely played, camera operators. So where is Molly these days since the reunion? Well, she has let us down. After they broke up, she asked Luis to come back just a few weeks later. Molly sees this as her not being a quitter. I see this as putting your daughters through emotional purgatory. And really, she's putting herself through it too. You know, when you see a 6-year-old crying, saying, "My mommy cries a lot because of her boyfriend," not good. That is a giant Nicole-sized red flag. Now, Molly is forcing this relationship on everyone. And by everyone, I even mean Luis. She said at least 3 times that she wants Luis to help out with Kinsley and that they're not her daughters. The girls are our daughters. All right, Molly, bullying Luis or backing him into a corner to love and care for your kids, it's not going to work. If he really cared, you'd see it. He doesn't even like your daughters, Molly. He has told you that. Now, Molly's hope that it gets better and her desire to be with Luis doesn't mean a damn thing to him, right? He just needed to come back to lock it down with that green card. And it's the same reason he apologizes to Olivia and Kinsley. And that's really putting it kindly, apologizing, because what he really did in that scene was sidestep around it and be a world-class asshole to a 6-year-old. If I heard anyone, and I'll group my husband in there with it, okay? If I heard anyone, even my husband, talk to my child, especially if they're 6 years old, in such a rude and mean way like he did to Kinsley, he said, like, I wish you could be quiet like this all your life, but I know you can't. He wasn't joking. He had this asshole smirk on his face, and I would have spider monkeyed my way across that room and strangled him if that were my kid. Nothing would be able to tear me off. Well, unless it was Uncle Jesse who walked in and pulled me off of him. Wink, wink. Hey, Jesse. All right, now let's talk about Paula and Russ. We're catching up with these 2 morons, and it's been a year now that Paula's been dancing and flitting around in Miami. And she says she's been working a lot as a model and actress, but I want to see that on IMDb or it didn't happen. Now, there's so many things to say about them, but I'm going to break it down into 2, possibly 3 categories. So first, she is wearing this bright red clown hair. I don't know if this is a thing now or if it's just a thing with teen moms because it looks exactly like Farrah Abraham. I mean, her makeup, the hair, the whole thing is screaming Farrah Abraham backdoor porn fame. And I'm not going to say teen mom because we know Farrah moved on, right? She's an entrepreneur of frozen yogurt and corporate rental furniture. and porn. Now, second of all, Paula is driving a new Mustang. Clearly she's trying to make it appear that she's raking in the money in Miami, but then we go film in her tiny little apartment that has no furniture, except for the giant beanbag that she has to share with her guests. Okay, Paula. Now, third, definitely last but not least, Russ's hair. What the hell happened to Russ? He looks like he recently escaped the FLDS, or he's on his Amish Rumspringa. Something is going on. He's using some sort of like a dark hair rinse, or maybe it's just depression taking itself out on his hair follicles. He could not have looked any worse or more miserable. I mean, so much that, like, I mean, think about that. If there were a side-by-side of photos from last season, the season before, and now, he looks like a totally different person. I would not have believed you if you said this is the same person before and after. Even his body tone has changed. His posturing, it's just, he looks like what a defeated man looks like, and it really made me sad, even though I'm not a huge fan of his. Now, I know it's also supposed to make me sad that Paula's grandma is sick, but come on. I was fuming as they were going on about this because you know what, Paula and Russ? You could have gotten your ass back down to Columbia if you could afford the red hair, the nails, the car, the photo shoots. No. My husband was just in Columbia a couple weeks ago, and I know for a fact the flights are not that crazy expensive. So, you know me, I always do my due diligence. I pulled up fares for flights from Miami to Columbia. There's like five different airports. And I looked it up for Memorial Day weekend, which is more expensive than most weekends on all airlines. And guess what? The flights ranged from less than $400 to no more than $450. So I guarantee Paula paid that same amount for that horrible blonde dye job last year. If she was going from dark brown to blonde, that's a multi-process. We're talking easily $400 to $500. I told you guys, I am so jacked up for the season. I am feeling alive. Okay, so, well, apparently they have scraped together $900 at this point, so they are making it down to Columbia, but no, warning, Juan's gonna be there. Dun, dun, dun. Enough with the Juan storyline. Stop trying to make Juan happen. It's just, if this is the extent of the Paula-Russ storyline, I don't think any of us are going to be tuning into them anymore. Just they need to move along. Adios. So now here we are. I have saved the most disgusting for last, and that would be none other than David and Annie. David and his reabsorbed penis and goiter, you know he's got one somewhere, have brought Annie to the pawn shop. You hear him very faintly say, "It's only for 1 month." Yeah. Okay, David. He knows that's the reasoning that pawn shops like stay alive. That's the whole point of them, right? People say it's only going to be a month and then they get to keep it. But the only thing that could have made this scene any better in my mind, because it was pretty freaking fantastic, was, again, this is where my reality TV fan fiction kicks in. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if Tony from Sister Wives was working behind the counter? Because you know he works at a pawn shop over in St. George, Utah, or Idaho, or whatever western state they're in. I mean, couldn't you just see him now, that big old greasy head of his, just smiling and saying, "Wow, Thailand, that rhymes with Pieland. That's my favorite restaurant. I like chocolate mousse. I like French staff. I like Tres Leches pie the best." A girl can dream, am I right? But sadly, it wasn't Tony to deliver the news that the gold engagement jewelry David bought, you remember the ones, with the money that his former friend Chris gave him back in Thailand, where David basically conned an entire village into thinking he, you know, like had a job and a bank account and a house to live in. Yeah. Well, that's where we got a, I'm going to say it was like a best of sequence of them back in Thailand. We got to see the used buffalo lot. We got to see David doing the electric slide down the street. And of course, you know, our favorite person of that season, Antonio, Queen Nikki's brother, telling David off in that epic Ninja Turtle, Penguin, Batman-ass bitch scene. Hashtag RIP Ninja Turtle, Penguin, Batman-ass bitch scene. Now, David is even more of a schmoozer than he was last season. If you ever thought it was possible, oh, it is. He is more sociopathic than ever. He will say anything to anyone to get himself in or out of a situation with no regard to how it impacts the other person. That is his MO. And I think Annie is not innocent in all of this. She is an opportunist as well. And I would bet anything that if this show was not paying them for another season, she would have been out of here on the first flight. But let's talk about where they're at now. She didn't take a flight out, and guess where they are? They're still in that motherfucking firehouse, and David still doesn't have a job, because of course he doesn't. He now thinks this show is his job. He never had any intention of getting a job because he's David. He's not going to pawn his own watch and bracelet. Yeah, did you see those? He was not taking those off. But he sure as hell is going to throw Nikki's name in there as the reason Chris isn't financially supporting him anymore. Yeah, Nikki is just so unreasonable, right, David? I mean, why would she want her household income to go towards her own children and college funds and vacations and living expenses for her own family when it can go towards feeding you and Annie? Now, I'm about to go off on a rant here, if I wasn't ranting already. Buckle yourselves in and maybe send me a Xanax. Now, let's go back in time and refer to that tell-all, okay? In no uncertain terms, Chris and Nikki told David, no more money, Chris is done, you are cut off. If that's not verbatim, it's damn close. But now David says, I used to think if my back was against a wall and I was in dire straits, Chris would help me out. I don't think that anymore. Yeah, like Chris is the bad guy. Hey, David, you are not in dire straits, first of all, and your back is sure as hell not up against a wall. You can't even lean against a wall because you're shaped like a weeble wobble. You are clearly not starving. You have gold on both your wrists and a gold wedding band on your finger, and Annie's wearing a winter coat that is newer than mine that I've had for 4 years. You are not that bad off. Now, this rent issue. David gets a letter from Chris saying that he wants to drop a lease and then he's got to pay $1,000 a month for rent. But David's acting like he deserves to live there for free. He told Chris he would pay when he had a job and he was on his feet, which of course he would never do because he never really wanted to work. He never had any intention to really pay Chris anything. But you know what? You do have a job now, David. Even if you say you're not working and you're not on your feet, you are because TLC is paying you. So if you want to live somewhere for free, you're just going to have to go and con someone else because Chris owes nothing to you, David. Nothing. It's completely the other way around. David owes Chris everything. He should just cut that TLC check and forward it right on to Chris. Now, unfortunately, that's where they leave us for this episode. And although it was 2 hours, it went by in a heartbeat. This season is going to be my everything. We got Mother Chantel hiring a private investigator, Nicole calling Azen on those recordings of him trying to con another girl. We got Jorge possibly having a daughter. We see Molly body checking Luis into the bed. God, I can't wait for that one. And then David's daughter is going to be confronting Annie about how Annie was, let's say, allegedly a bar girl back in Thailand. If you don't know what that is, go ahead and Google it. In case you're eating, I don't want to make you choke. But there's a little hint right there for you. I mean, this season is, like, I feel like I'm in Oprah's audience on the Favorite Things Day. It just, the joy and the surprises just keep coming. So let's just bow our heads in prayer and thanks. Amen. Now, after a very quick break, I'm going to be back with Teen Mom 2. You know, here is the reason why I love talking with you guys in the Facebook group and on Twitter. So last night when Teen Mom 2 was airing live, I, you know, had some momming to attend to, so I couldn't watch it live. Started watching it after the kids went to sleep. So I was super anxious that I was missing something big, but I got so much reassurance and warnings and tweets that this episode was not that great. And more specifically, that the drama that was played up during the episode was just blown out of proportion. Now, that's never held me back from watching Teen Mom before, but at least I felt like I wasn't missing something incredible, like, oh, Janelle's testimony on the stand about her world-famous recipe for ice water. So we start out this episode with that little cartoon teddy bear holding a sign that says, Round 2. Amazing. Now, Kale is in the makeup chair being tended to by two adult women who are not paid enough to deal with this shit. And she and Brianna are calling each other versions of Ratchet and Bougie. Now, I truly didn't know which one was worse, so I looked it up. Now, interestingly enough, I found the definition for bougie ratchet, one word, adjective. The definition is as follows. One who possesses resting bitch face, a snobby attitude, expensive taste, is picky about their friends and what social gatherings they will attend, but also cannot resist the urge to twerk uncontrollably, not with slash on just anyone, drink irresponsibly, make immoral decisions, and engages in sexually promiscuous behavior more than occasionally. Used in a sentence, she's had at least a half bottle of Hennessy with her pinky up. She is definitely bougie ratchet. Now, I'd like to see that in the script's national spelling bee. Little homeschoolers all across the nation being eliminated because they don't know the origin of bougie ratchet. And if you think I'm dissing these little innocent spellers, think again. I freaking love watching the script's national spelling bee. It starts in 6 days. I'm not kidding. So you better tune in. You will laugh. You will cry. I mean, let's be honest, you're mostly going to laugh, but don't knock it until you try it. It's on ESPN, starts May 31st. But let's go back to the exact opposite of the kids in the script spelling bee, and that would be Kale and Brittany. You know, I love Brittany. She is ready to claw Kale's full sleeve off in one pounce across that room. And Kale's trying to act like she's not scared. I think I might have said the same thing last week, but I mean, think about it. If she were not surrounded by all those adults and security in the room to break things up if it went wild, there is no way she would be talking to Brittany like she is. She would be hiding from her in 0.2 seconds. And then, now if that wasn't enough, you hear out of nowhere Roxanne crowing, "You got some slaying to do, Lucy." Now, she is draped in this scarf. I need to find out where she got it. I would love to get my hands on it. I think it would look super cute with a pair of jeans and a white tank top. But apparently what Roxanne has said about having some splaining to do, Lucy, that is what put Kale over the edge. She thinks that's disrespectful. Okay, Kale. It's classic Kaylin, twisting whatever situation she's in into her being the victim of some sort. Kale claims she just wants to calmly talk behind closed doors without cameras. Okay, now that you've had your demands made known to everyone about your separate hair room and custom nursery, now Kale's gonna be the responsible one. Now let's jump to the next scene and, oh, good God, I almost choked on my own tongue because David pops up from behind a fence like the frickin' Golden State Killer's protege in training. And producer Kristen tries to make him lighten up because he says that he and Janelle are refusing to go to this reunion breakfast now. So with a straight face, I don't know how she does it, but Kristen, I'm not even making this up, says, okay, who does she hate today? I mean, boom, mic drop, and scene. However, David is too dumb to catch on to kind of her passive sarcasm, and he recites this list of his possible future victims, allegedly. Barbara, Nathan. And then silence. Well, you know the list is short, but the day is young and there's plenty of time for Janelle to be triggered by something she sees on Twitter. Really what it is that Janelle and David are afraid Dr. Drew is going to ask them questions that they don't want to answer, which I thought was really weird because I think we've all agreed that Dr. Drew goes way too soft on these girls, especially Janelle and Farrah, who deserve to get nailed every time in their hypocrisy. But producer Kristen has to play this game to keep Janelle and David from refusing to film, right? So she just is going to say whatever she needs to keep them with the hope that things are going to go okay. So she's like, okay, I'll check in with you later in the day. And she's crossing her fingers that they're going to show up for the filming. Now, meanwhile, my girl Shirley, you know, I love her. She's stuck in the room with the DeJesus trio who are going over what Kale's deal is. And then all of a sudden, Bone comes out. Bone, in her Burlington Coat Factory clearance rack dress, got this sudden surge of balls out of nowhere. And she storms into Brianna's dressing room and demands to know why they're talking about Kale. You see, Kale was crying and woke Bone up from her nap. And so they need to stop ganging up on Kale because Kale's sad. Excuse me? So what you mean to say, Bone, is that Kale was obviously talking about Brianna too, which is how you know that there's a beef that went down. So let's just break it down. Why is it okay for Kale to be talking to you about it, but Brianna isn't supposed to talk about with anyone by herself in her own room? Kale must control what people are talking about at all times, even when she's not around, which just screams narcissist and control freak. Now, I thought it was over at that point, but oh no, you were just starting. Brianna starts walking down the hallway a little bit, yelling at Bone that she's going to mess her up if Bone comes back to her room and starts talking to her like that again where her kids were. And then Bone starts acting all tough, saying, smack me, doing this little like godfather thing on her neck. And then, of course, she quickly goes in the dressing room and shuts the door. Okay, Bone, you are a poser and a dork. Get the hell out of here. You don't belong in that stupid dress and the horrible boots and that hair from 93. And I know it was 1993 because I wore my hair exactly like that at my eighth grade confirmation. This is where Brittany smells fear. And she leaps from that makeup chair, throws something at her mom, Roxanne, for her to hold, and starts screaming at Kale's door that she will beat Bone's ass if she dares to come out again in her hillbilly ass dress. Well, I thought I nailed it with the Burlington Coat Factory, but she really hit the nail on the head. No one is going to mess with her sister and her nieces, and this is exactly why I love Brittany. I think she's the best person on the show. I know she's not everyone's cup of tea and she drives some people nuts, but you know what? She's my favorite flavor of tea. I could watch her all day long. More Brittany, less Chelsea, who just hides in her room anyway, right? Now, where is our little West Virginia peanut? There she is, wearing a pantsuit cape combo that I can only imagine is from the Dixie Carter for JCPenney collection. Walking in her power, y'all. While she's literally throwing peanuts down her throat, she says she doesn't regret this shitstorm that she and she alone has caused between Kale and Brianna by her stirring up things with her exaggerations. And, oh, Leah's also talking to Aaliyah, Grace, Alibaba, Leah Ace, like she's never met the little girl before. Leah, stop it. We have seen you feed this child beefaroni from a can on multiple occasions, and you even refuse to feed her a gas station breakfast. Stop it, like you are this pageant mom bullshit. Now, take a moment, prepare yourself for what happened next. Hey, hey, how'd you get here, Doris? What took place next, the Catholic Church should look into as a true miracle, because Barbara Jean Evans, that's what my fan fiction middle name for her is, and Nathan Ripped T. Griffith hugged. Yeah, naked armpit on Bab's shoulder hugged. Oh, how your tune has changed, huh, Nathan? Now, meanwhile, while they are deeply enjoying each other in embrace, Janelle and David are laughing over getting patted down when they enter the studio, and Janelle's laughing, just like court, babe. Oh, teen moms, just like us, am I right? Very briefly, we get Brittany apologizing to the producer for losing her temper, and she says, oh, please don't get us kicked off the show. That was such a real-world moment, and I don't mean real-world like you and I mean MTV's real world. Remember when they would kick roommates out of the house if they felt threatened? Remember, it wasn't not funny? I mean, it just gave me the chills, because what I would give to watch seasons 1 through 5 again. I don't know if they stream it somewhere, if I can get it like DVD collections. If you know, let me know. I will sign up for Hulu if that's what it takes. I got Netflix, but damn, I need Los Angeles, San Francisco with Pedro, and oh, I need Miami with Dan and the "it wasn't yours to touch, you stupid bitch." Okay, anyway, Javi arrives, and so do Brianna's ass implants. You guys, those things have shifted during flight because they are on her hips now. She's got a cute little figure, but now she's all kinds of geometry that I can't wrap my mind around. What is his name? Dr. Butt? She needs a realignment. Let's tweet him on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, wherever the hell she got that. He's got to do something to put her back together. Now let's talk about Janelle. Jace makes his debut. He's all slicked out, and it broke my heart because he looked really cute. So cute that Janelle quickly sends him off to do her work, and that would be to retrieve her other son who she doesn't love as much as Ensley. Now there in the room with Kaiser are about 37 other adults, including Nathan's new girlfriend, who I think she may have giantism. Like, she looked extraordinarily stretched out. Now, I hope her strength is as much as her height, because she's going to need it. They bring Kaiser in to see Janelle, and there is this really tense, weird vibe, because Nate and his mom are staring at Kaiser as Janelle and he are interacting. And I have to say, I was heartbroken, because if you listen to what Janelle says to Kaiser, she asks him, "Did you miss me? You did?" And then she just keeps on talking to the makeup person. Not once did she ever say, "I missed you. What did you do? Oh, I missed you so much, Kaiser." You know, things that a normal mom would say, you want them to know how much you miss them, how much you thought about them. But no. She just wants Kaiser's love. She wants his unconditional love and assurance that, you know, he missed her, and then she has no intention to ever give him any reciprocation. That, oh God, that poor kid. And Jace too. I'm sure Janelle isn't even saying that much to Jace when he goes to see her every few weeks, but yet she doesn't see Kaiser a few days and she's all, "Oh, Kaiser, Kaiser." Moving on. I mean, again, this is just one tragic scene after another. What the hell went down with Devon, Brianna's ex, when he showed up? I'm going to have to do some deep diving this week and find out some more information on what exactly happened. But for right now, all I know is that I started crying in that scene because Brittany started crying and Devon was speaking in full sentences. Those honey buns in county jail, they must have done his body good, because he has never strung words together like this ever in the years that we've seen him. If you haven't gotten that this episode is all over the place, jumping up and down this hallway at the studio, you're surely feeling it now, because we're back with Janelle. She's now on stage with St. Drew, and he points out that, you know, Janelle, you're attracted to men who have violent tendencies, Nathan and David, which, like a light switch, triggers and pisses off David. And he's such a moron because he's proving Drew's point about him being violent, that he's aggressive and he's threatening because he's threatening violence against Drew. And then he storms out of the studio demanding that Janelle go with him. And because Janelle will always put men before her kids, she shoos Kaiser off in a way and leaves with David. Surprisingly, they drove off in an SUV instead of the alien spaceship Janelle arrived in with that hair, but we gotta head back inside because there's more drama once again between Brianna and Kale. Now at this point, at minute 33, halfway through, I was understanding what you were saying. It was beating a dead horse. I was officially over it all. So when Kale, Leah, and Chelsea, oh yeah, remember, she's there too. They all demanded that they meet with the exec producers alone. And I screamed aloud, and then I grabbed a blow pop because it's either I start binging on trail mix, which is very calorie heavy, or I suck on a blow pop and crunch it to help curb my hunger and my anger. So while I was keeping my diet in check with my blow pop, pretending that it was a very delicious mix of raisins, craisins, maybe some cashews, almonds, little chocolate mix in there, I keep hearing Kale use this word, unacceptable. And she is over-talking everyone in that room. And her reasoning is she just wants to further her agenda to get revenge on Brianna. And she wants Brianna and Janelle kicked off the show. Okay, now the three most boring girls on the show think the show hinges on what they bring. Oh, the irony and the delusion is strong. Now, fast forward through the taping of the reunion, which they end up doing all together anyway, ha ha ha, and Janelle is packing up to leave and sees Nate's girlfriend hugging her mom, Barbara. Whoa. Janelle freaks out because as much as Janelle says that she hates her mom, we all know she loves her and she misses her. But, you know, instead of checking herself, which is what people who are mentally healthy would do, Janelle just lashes out and starts a whole new feud with basically anyone who happens to step in front of her. Now, Kaiser is in the middle of all of this, which is the saddest thing to watch. Everyone is yelling. David comes in. He starts stirring more shit up. And then Janelle is just looking to start stuff with anyone. She goes into Barbara's room. She's on the verge of going off on her friend, but she just gets this high, which I don't understand. Not from drugs, well, probably from that too, allegedly. But it's almost like she gets this high from pushing people who are close to her in her life away and then taking anger out on them. I don't know, is that some sort of label you can put on mental illness, or is it just Janelle being a bitch? Because that's what she was this entire episode. No, I'm not saying Barbara is perfect because she is not, but in relation to Janelle, the woman is a saint. And I loved her even more when she's outside saying goodbye to Nate and she says that she was this close to hitting David. Yeah, as if she could really take the huge dude down. But maybe I hit my head on something as I was watching this. I don't know if this all actually happened, but I think I saw Nate and Babs bonding over a cigarette. You know, if this didn't happen in my dreams, or maybe it's more of a nightmare, and they really did make amends, I think there's a real chance for peace in the Middle East. Anything is possible if we put our minds to it and have some counseling from Dr. Drew. Now, in closing, Leah walks away in her power, y'all, and the staff at the studio walked away with a paycheck that was far less than they deserved. Well, I know it was a short show, but I wanted to get this out earlier to you in the week because I want to talk about 90 Day Fiancé all freaking week long. So in the meantime, until next week, remember to check out patreon.com/realitytvpod and my new podcast with Carrie coming up this week, Moms on the Rocks. We are going to be recording later this week, so episodes will be up shortly. Go and subscribe so you get a notice when the first episode drops. And between shows, find me and other listeners at Reality TV Pod everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And as always, until next week, stay salty.